Hey everybody, I hope you and your loved ones are safe, happy and healthy. Before you listen to or watch the show, remember to subscribe and follow us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn to stay up to date with all the latest news and updates from my legal club. If you, your family or your business need any legal support or no obligation solicitor quotes, please get in touch with us at mylegalclub.co.uk. Before you listen to the show, please note the content is for information purposes only and is not to be relied upon. Stay well, and I hope you enjoy the show.
And I've had you on the podcast before, and I didn't realise that you were part of companies before. So you're doing exactly what you've done before, and you can see the strength of that. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to get you onto today, and we'll get into it shortly, because there's so many things you're looking after on a daily basis. So it'd be great to get into how you do it all and how you fit it in. But before we get into that, let's talk about mortgage advisors, because they're the majority of the people that listen. What are you finding are their biggest struggles at the minute? What are they coming to you with?
So I'll start with Mortgage Broker Club. So my legal club has probably the most relevant to this podcast today is that we have a conveyance and arm. It's quite unique and discuss that later. And that works with predominantly mortgage brokers, but estate agents as well. We also have a trading style, if you want, called Mortgage Broker Club. And that isn't a mortgage club. It's a mortgage broker community, really, TMBC. And if you go online, you can look at that website and it has things like eBooks on Google My Business. It has eBooks on how to convert referrals, how to do online lead gen, with literally walk-through guides with really top people who are either mortgage brokers who have done pay-per-click or mortgage brokers that have actually done pay-per-click themselves in-house and in terms of the challenges that they faced, and people who have outsourced that as well. We've also spoken to some pay-per-click lead gen providers who have said, well, these are the best things that the mortgage brokers do when it works, and these are some of the things that won't work.
So proof essentially that this,
if you do it this way, expectations, it's going to work. Script, you name it. So there's a lot of free resources on there. You don't have to put your email address in or anything like that. You can just go and use those resources. Not as good as yours, but we also have podcasts and YouTube videos and things like that out. So we're very privileged to have had people like you on, Nicola Firth. I'm going to miss people out, which is unfair. We've had like Ash Borland, David Miles, Rosalina. So we've done lots of stuff in those kind of spaces, but we've also had mortgage brokers come on the show about how they're converting cases that others are leaving behind. We've just done a recent interview with Mortgage Mike from Twitter that a few people might know, Mike Lawler. So there's things like that that we've done that I think we try and delve deep with them into the nitty gritty. So in terms of Mortgage Broker Club, the most common things we're finding at the moment is obviously the typical thing between DA and AR. So quite a lot of people come to us looking to review either alternative compliance services and the like. We get probably some of the newer or less experienced brokers coming to us for lead gen and referrals and wanting to know, I want to do something on social, but I also want something more salesy. So obviously, and genuinely, we send them to you. And then have a chat with them about the sales sort of side of things. We don't get any affiliate revenue for anyone listening to this. We just do that.
That's the legal bit. Sean's always about the legal bit.
The disclaimer, we don't seek any affiliate revenue. So I think the main thing we kind of get there is within them arenas. Quite often lead gen and referrals are why people are coming on. And it tends to be sort of the newer brokers or less experienced brokers perhaps that are either doing okay and want to grow further, or it's just run a bit dry for a little bit and they want to replenish the stock, for want of a better phrase. I think with the brokers we work with on the conveyancing side of the business in actually my legal club itself, it's the usual things. Lenders, particularly at the moment, moving rates, massive problem. Down valuing, big problem. You know, where clients' expectations and or estate agents' expectations, the property price is just not aligned with what the valuers are now going back to the lenders on. That can be an issue. So I think for them, it's being stuck on with the lenders when they're moving the goalposts last minute and so forth. I think that's a big challenge. Another challenge that goes a bit under the radar for some since April is the mess that the government have caused in high-rise leasehold. This is a problem is going to hit now and in the next 2 weeks. So we're recording on the 26th of September. For those who don't know, and this is quite frankly ridiculous, a high-rise property is defined roughly as five stories or more. but you could be buying a ground floor flat and you are counted as having a high-rise property.
Hello.
So the issue is that the government have made it so logistically difficult under the new legislation that initially a lot of law firms just said, we don't want it because it's uncertain, a hell of a lot of work to do. The initial issue, though, was it took forever and was causing immense delays. There is a bigger problem that's coming, though, in that for those who don't know, law firms will normally do professional indemnity insurance renewals for either October or April. And most law firms will do 12-month PII renewals. So we are now right at the point where every law firm is either renewing with their existing insurer or moving to another one. Here's the problem. About 2 weeks ago, a very big insurer said, we are not insuring high-rise leasehold conveyancing cases with immediate effect. So you could have 100 of them in your law firm. They need to go that day because you're no longer insured on them. There is a question at the moment as to how many insurers are going to take the same view. So I think brokers are going to have to seriously consider in their fact find that they might be doing a flat or a mason out, anything, a leasehold property, be it residential or commercial, and they need to be asking the question, how many stories are in the building? Not are you on the fifth, sixth, seventh floor?
Yeah,
how many stories are in the building? And if it's five or more, I'd probably be saying to the client, if you've got any way of buying something else, probably do. But no, in real life, you would need to double check, depending on which lender you're using, that the law firm you want to use is insured to take them. And you would also need to make sure that you tick the little high-rise leasehold button on the quote, because firms are charging an additional $350 to $850. Now, that gives you an indication of the amount of work and delay, because there are some firms that would do an entire residential purchase within those bands of legal cost. Mm-hmm. So to be adding that amount on as an add-on shows you how much is involved. And it's obviously difficult for any, if you've got cases with a firm right now, I would reach out to them and ask them to check if they're still insured and to keep you abreast of the position if they're a new PII.
Wow, very interesting. That's something that's come out of the podcast that I don't think anybody was expecting. So thank you for that. So those are the big struggles that people are having. You're then able to tell them where to go for, and we're going to talk about the strategy question at the end about how to generate new leads. It's great that you have that ability to pass them here, there and everywhere. One of the biggest things that we tend to find is people find it very hard to manage the diary and fit everything in, especially if somebody comes to us and says, look, Chris, I want you to do our socials because I simply don't have the time to do it myself. Coming from somebody like yourself who is managing my legal club, the mortgage broker club, you've got other things going on, you've got other podcasts going on. What are your tips to mortgage brokers that are looking to manage their time more effectively?
First thing, and I'll only touch on this briefly, and I know it's really, really cheesy, but it is genuinely the truth in that, you know, I've gone public on this in the past. Like, I had a complete breakdown sort of 2017, and understandably so, when people know exactly what was going on. But there's in terms of that meltdown, there was some very difficult life challenges, complete burnout. But if you're not getting decent enough sleep, which at the time I wasn't with the kids I have got, but if you're not getting decent sleep, you're not looking after nutrition, you're not exercising, your energy levels aren't going to be great, your mental health's not going to be great either, if you're not doing anything for that or taking any time on that, ultimately it's no different to anything in life, be it a property or be it a human being. If you're not looking after it, and then you want to load it up with immense pressure and just absolutely run it into the ground, a bit like a car, you're just going to absolutely leather it, never service it. You can't be shocked when it breaks. It doesn't matter who you are. So I think on time management and just performance, one of the biggest things I think is you need to start your day at 15 out of 10. Because I'll guarantee you, especially as a mortgage broker, the world is going to beat you up. You, as a mortgage broker, you are reliant on too many people and too many variables. You are not in control of so many parts of this destiny. There's going to be frustration. There's going to be some big blows coming in. And you've got to juggle lenders and BDMs of lenders and clients and new leads and referrers putting work into you. and your regulatory responsibilities and the conveyancing aspects of this, and you might be doing your REMOs and deciding which ones you're going to do cashback REMOs on, and that you might have a limited company portfolio you're looking to do and you want to grow the business, and then you might be doing your latter buys, and then you've got blah, 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 blah. It's a lot for them to cope with. So I would say that, you know, you need to take the time out to figure out what kind of thing works for you, whether it be like meditation, Tony Robbins Prime.
So, you know, so we've got all these strategies, but when you say start the day 15 out of 10, what do you mean by that?
For me, I can only talk about me.
How do you do it?
There's a couple of people I wouldn't name because it wouldn't be fair, but they came to me saying they were having some struggles and wanted to know a bit about my morning routine, if you want. I know it's dead cheesy because there's so many podcasts that do it, and mm-hmm. I think let's give them the benefit of the doubt that they're being legitimate on it. For me, what I mean about being 15 out of 10 is I find that if I don't get up in the morning and get up, I wouldn't say early, get up at the earliest opportunity so that before the school rush begins and mm-hmm. other people start potentially taking your time, as rude as that is, I like to get up, drink at least half a liter of water. I then do yoga. I have loads of back and physical problems in that regard, so I don't really have much of a choice, unfortunately. So I have to do some sort of maintenance in that regard. But stretching and yoga, even if you haven't got physical problems, is no bad thing. And then I do something called, I do Tony Robbins priming. So I just find that on YouTube and I go through that process. Mm-hmm. And that sort of resets my mind. It really makes me fresh. And then I do a workout, and nothing too strenuous, mad as that sounds. I'm not like climbing up mountains at six in the morning or anything. And I then do Wim Hof breathing and Wim Hof cold showers. Okay. One of the great things about the cold shower element is I don't care what problems you've got in your life. Like, I'm talking boiler off, cold tap run, you go straight in cold. And when you are under that cold, your brain isn't thinking about any problems you've got. I don't care how grand they are. I don't care how serious they are. Your brain's only bothered about one thing. So being able to grab that steering wheel and stay calm and stay focused and actually maintain your body temperature is just, I think you're drilling the message in early on that your brain is the brain, but I'm in control of the steering wheel. Like, when I say go, we go. And I think from a mental health point of view, no one wants to exercise in the morning. No one does. No one wants to have a cold shower. No one wants to do the Wim Hof breathing. I'd much rather have a coffee and
go to bed.
or have more time in bed, to be fair. But ultimately, I think when it comes to time management, discipline and consistency is crucial across all areas of your life.
How do you do that with your diary, Sean? How do you manage your diary? Do you time block it? Do you have certain calls? What do you do?
Yeah, so I'm a big believer in two things. One is eat the live frog, and the second one is a time. So eat the live frog, for those who don't know where the analogy allegedly comes from, I think it was in America. They were looking at who would be great executives, and they do this ridiculous thing where they have boxes with fake frogs in that are riveting and jumping up and down. I think they basically say you've got to open the box, put the frog in your mouth, it's got to go fully in, and then put it back in the box. So you're not actually eating it. Like,
I never knew this is where it was from. I heard of it.
So, I may be barking on this. So anyone who wants to criticize me for being wrong, I'm passing it on. But yeah, it sounds good, doesn't it? So we'll stick with it. But this is what I was told. So basically what they're looking for, though, is some executives who just go, no. So like, okay, well, you've ruled yourself out of the process. See you later. Other executives would pace the room and just procrastinate. They were like, don't want them. The others would just open the box. Just go sort of Mel Robbins style, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Do it.
And they were like, that's what we want. We don't need procrastinators. We just need people who go, something needs doing. We're going to do it. And we're going to do it right now in a cool, calm. That's what we need at board level. And that's where eating the live frog comes from. So I think that when it comes to time management, one element is eating the live frog, e.g., whatever the worst things are you've got to do. Your FCA forms, your paperwork, your administration. I don't know what it is that you hate doing the most, but I would say lock them in early in the morning and get them out of the way. And so eating the live frog is a big thing that I would highly recommend. The other one is a time. So I would recommend at least every Sunday or if you wanted to, Friday afternoon, look at the week ahead and block book time in your diary where you are just unavailable. Now, you might want to put extra notes in there in terms of what you're planning to do at that time, but lock that time in. And I also use Calendly a lot.
Just about to say a really good way to do this.
It enables you to have in your diary space where you'll do new client calls, problem solving calls. You can have that space in daily, and you can then have that those links out there so that people can book those slots in. It relieves a bit of email pressure, and you could, but you need to lock in first your unavailability bits, and you'll learn over time what kind of ratios you need and what kind of consistency that you need for that. Mm-hmm. And I find that that works really well. And so there's A-Time, Eating the Live Frog, Calendly is a great feature for that. But I also would recommend, if you can, something I find really helpful. And if you've got the time to do this, you could do this on a Monday morning, you could do this on a Friday tea time, you could do it at the weekend. I would reverse engineer what you want out of the week so that you make sure you're spending 80% of your time on the things that really matter. There's a massive, across mortgage brokers, law firms and everything, there's a danger that everyone becomes busy fools, and you can spend 80, 90, 100% of your time on things that should only have 20% of importance. We could all just get lost in emails all day, every day. Mm-hmm. But what happens to your regulatory responsibilities? What happens to your lead gen? What happens to the existing book of work that you've got? What happens to other things within that space? So it's really important to spin plates. And I don't think you should just figure out which plates to spin whilst you're doing them, if you can avoid that, although there is a bit of that.
Maybe plan it out. And yeah, that and works I mean, with
you
the
can take that to the nth degree, by the way, Chris. Just like, you could literally sit there on a Friday, on a Sunday morning and go, right, next week it's really important to me that I'm actually present and I spend 15 minutes with my kids before bedtime.
Mm.
And that's no phone. That's actually the most important thing for me. It's really important to me that I exercise 3 or 4 times next week, and I'm going to lock in exactly when I'm doing that. What are the most important things for me? Because ultimately, if you're not in good nick, you're no good to anyone, mentally mm-hmm. and physically. And if you're, and I say this, the nutrition and sleep comes in because of your energy levels. If you're not getting good sleep and you're not starting your day well, the world is going to beat you up. You are only going to go downhill through the course of the day. It's very difficult to catch that and rebuild it up. And the last thing you need is then the sugar crashes and everything else that goes on. And then you're going to be, your temper's going to go, frustration's going to build. And if you live your life every day at 4 out of 10, your quality of life is 4 out of 10. I would rather start at 15, have the rest of the world beat me down to a 7, and I'm living at 7. Whereas mm-hmm. I think if you start your day at 7 out of 10, I can guarantee you there are going to be days when just this profession will drill you down to a 2, and you don't want to be living every day at a 2. So I think you'll feel like you haven't got control of your diary, and I used to feel like that. You can wrestle control of that back, and it still work. And I think that is the best way to do it. And A-Time is going, I know I've got to spend some time on whatever the important tasks are, and I'm locking them in where it's no phone, no emails. I would recommend doing them early in the morning, always A-Time, because if there's an urgent problem, you've got the rest of the day to fix it. Yeah, whereas if you start putting A-Time in at like 2 p.m. and things need sorting by 5, you've made a bit of a rod for your own back there.
That's really, they're really useful tips. And I like the way that you talk about blocking that time, and Calendly allows you to do that. If nobody's ever used Calendly, so it's Calendly. And you can link it to your Outlook. So if you block out time in your Outlook, it'll be blocked out in your Calendly, and you can send someone a link and they can book directly into your diary. And you could have a protection appointment, a mortgage appointment, a catch-up appointment, whatever you want. I think it's like £14 a month. Or if you want the free version, you can just do one appointment type. So go and have a look at that, because it's really useful. And I find it saves a lot of time to and fro with clients. And you can put it on your website as well. You can put a live calendar on your website.
I would recommend as a broker that in your email signature, you should have your own, depending on what you do with your social channels. And obviously be led by Chris on this one. But whatever social channels you would talk anything about mortgages on, the social channels you would want clients being on with you, put them in your email signature and put your Calendly link in the email signature. so the client massive can see bonus, it, they're aware that you've got it, they can use that link to book a call in with you or whatever. And it doesn't mean you've got to keep it. If someone books in a call that you feel is abusing the process,
you can change it, manage it the other way.
It's
the way forward, I think, online booking. So before we get into this charity and the strategy, give our listeners an insight into what My Legal Club does and how it could help them then.
So it's quite ironic, really. My lecturers at uni would laugh that I'm involved in the conveyancing space because you could break the spine on my book when we were doing the exams. I still passed them all, I must say.
Good memory.
We just felt there was a gap in the market that we could try and fulfill. And this comes from my background in working with introducers and private equity operations as well that were involved in panel management, but not in conveyancing. And in terms of how we can help, you have brokers and estate agents building rapports with individual fee earners, let's say at local firms, but they probably don't have all of the technological benefits. That firm can't deal with necessarily every lender. That firm might be not the best for every single type of case. So they might be awesome at purchase and sale, but they might not want to do cashback REMA, or they might not be able to do limited company buy-to-let, or they might not be able to help you with bridging. At the same point in time, and I won't name them, there are other portals or panels that maybe have a reputation sometimes as trying to drive volume, of being more of a SaaS type business, of using factory type firms where you might get better pricing, you might get a beauty parade of options, but maybe the service standard isn't there and you haven't got quite the same leverage and you don't have quite the same rapport ultimately within that. So what we wanted to do was just fit a model in the middle of that to try and create the best of both worlds for those people who want to try and get the best of both worlds. So we wanted to create something that is very much service driven. And if you reverse engineer this from a solicitor point of view, you want to have a caseload that enables you to deliver a 5-star job. I could get you Kevin a QC, but there is a point in time where he has too big a caseload to perform. Yep. So ultimately, whether you're using a local firm, you could have the best fee earner in the world. It could be your best mate in the playground. But if the senior partner decides to sack Valerie and give half of her cases to your mate is not going to deliver the same service standards as you once did because it's bordering on impossible. So because of my experience, we know that those things are possible and likely to happen. So as best as we can, we try and contractually tie the law firms in to those things to try and stop those things from happening. So you also need to have a fee earner that is not new to the firm. And this might be just me being Ben. We used to have a very bad hit rate on recruitment. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of law firms that struggle to recruit fee earners from elsewhere. They've been programmed by another firm. Everyone works a bit differently, might have some bad habits. And it's really hard to iron some of them out and get them working the way you want them to work. Sometimes it's much better to bring trainee solicitors in and teach them from scratch. Mm-hmm. And you get a much better hit rate with that in a lot of firms. So something we do is we try and pre-vet the fee earners. We interview a lot of them. And we have a pretty tight SLA, which is the same as what we had in our law firms. So things like non-urgent emails from clients or brokers would have to be dealt with between 0 and 16 working hours. Mm-hmm. You'd expect 90% of that to be 0 to 8 hours. And then there's no gray area if a broker or a client, and typically it would be a client going to a broker saying, you've recommended me to this law firm, they never get back to me. And that's really unfair to a broker. Because for law firms to generate this work online, it would cost them a fortune to probably get a successful purchase or sale case through pay-per-click. Probably would cost them 3 to 4, maybe even 500 quid upfront capital. So for a broker to recommend that firm, get a case in without the law firm outlaying any upfront capital, like that's a big win for the law firm. Like that's extremely valuable. But that broker's acting as the BDM for that law firm. They're the one recommending them to the client. Brokers get about 72%-ish of their business from word of mouth. Like they're taking a big risk in terms of doing that. And I don't think everyone properly respects the risk that the brokers are taking.
Yeah.
And the benefit by referring, that gives them. So it's really important to us that we have that SLA in place so that thank God it's very rare that this happened. But if a client says to a broker, this law firm you recommended aren't coming back to me, the broker can just email and introduce them to us. We say, look, we look after everything for the broker. We're the ones that put the recommendations forward. Send us your chronology of emails. Right, this is the agreement that we have with the law firms. Are they responding to you within 0 to 16 hours, or ideally 0 to 8 working hours, or are they not? And there's no grey area, ultimately. The law firms have signed that because either, look, things can happen and one-offs, mm-hmm. everyone would forgive. But ultimately, you've either got someone incapable or you've got someone with too big a caseload. So we try and remove any fee earners that are incapable and make sure we're only working with the mother-in-law test. So whenever I'm interviewing senior partners, I say, if you want to work with my legal club, you can only put fee earners forward that we interview that you would give the mother-in-law's case to. There's a lot of fee earners and a lot of firms that even the senior partners wouldn't give. And it might be that they're technically brilliant, but customer service poor. There are other people that can be customer service amazing, but not necessarily technically brilliant. So we want teams that are ideally a bit of both. And then it is trying to manage the service. Then, so we take a bit of a different approach to updates. I sympathize with the legal profession because I was taught wrong and I taught people wrong. And we were always taught that an update, would you tell Chris when something's happened? But actually, that's nonsense, because if I tell Chris that searches have come in, well, I'm sending out a search report anyway, so everyone knows. If I'm telling Chris that a mortgage offer's come in, I'm sending out a mortgage deed, so everyone knows. Really, what an update is, in my view, is I want to put in bright flashing light that I'm on it, that we're not stalling it. I want you to know where the lock is on this, where, and there might not even be an issue, but I want you to know what we need and from where. And it stops the paranoia setting in, especially with clients. You know, they might be buying a house, first-time buyers, whatever, extremely stressful, not gone through the process before. Brokers and estate agents, I think, probably have all had bad experiences in conveyancing somewhere down the line. So you're once bitten, twice shy, rightly, in that regard. So something we do contractually is each, you know, during the week, we secure that information on every case to say, not just what's happened, but what's outstanding.
Where's the lock?
From like whom? That. Are there any issues? So as an example, our approach to updates contractually is a bit different, where, say, Chris, you've got 30 cases with us. You might be able to log in and go, right, I've got some clients that haven't returned paperwork. On some of them, it's the other side are just not replying to inquiries. I won't insert name of firm, but it might be a firm that has a reputation. You all know who they are. So therefore, you can pass on to the estate agents, listen, our guys are chasing. They're not getting a response.
That's go and deal with them yourself. So, yeah.
It could be, look, searches aren't back, the ETA, and it's another 10 days. It might be dealing with a management company.
So it's keeping everybody up to date then, isn't it? It's that communication, isn't it? And like you say, just making sure everybody knows where they stand. And it's what brokers are crying out for at the minute. So where's the best place for people to get in touch with you if they want to discuss that platform and that bit of software?
So you can drop us an email into info@mylegalclub.co.uk, or if you want to go on the My Legal Club website, we have all the testimonials and full part of the website and for the conveyancing portal for estate agents and brokers on mylegalclub.co.uk. And if you go on themortgagebrokerclub.co.uk, you can also access it there and register there too on themortgagebrokerclub.co.uk. And look, it's not for everyone. Some brokers might go on there and, you know, our prices are really good, but we don't work with any factory firms. So you're not going to get like real cheap as chips stuff.
Cheap solicitors quotes,
our approach is, you know, we work with some law firms that are top 10 review solicitors. We work with a law firm that are number one on Trustpilot for cashback remortgage work.
Wow.
We are able to do equity release limited company and everything else. So our view is, how do we get you a five-star job and then get the price down to the minimum it can be whilst not sacrificing the five-star job? Because every fee earner needs to be doing a minimum of 80 cases. A good fee earner would have 100 files easy. And that's not a negative, but that's what they have to have ultimately. And if you want them to have 50 cases, you need to start upping the price. So there is a sweet spot to all of this for everybody's benefit.
Because you can see both sides, can't you? You've got experience with both sides.
Then. Yeah, cards on the table. I think people down south, brokers down south, will enjoy our platform more. And that's not to say people up north won't, I'm a proud Northerner here, by the way. It's just because we are obviously working with some top Northern law firms, and ultimately their prices are cheaper than Southern law firms because they're not paying the same rates, they're not paying the same rent, they're not paying the same wages.
So to Southerners, it seems quite affordable.
Yeah, so if you're a broker in Essex, the prices on the Essex High Street are going to look ridiculous compared to ours. But if you're a broker in a northern town, our prices are going to be quite similar to what they would get on the high street, but you don't get all the bells and whistles and all the other benefits by the client going to the high street is what you would get with us and via this service. And I think the brokers that work with us generally say it's quick and easy, they're good firms, good fee earners, and if I've got a difficult client, we're really good at mediating that for free and helping. But if it isn't a difficult client and they have a genuine gripe, we don't hide from it. We'll investigate it very, very quickly and engage with senior partners. And we've got a pretty watertight contract. There's not a lot of wriggle room for anyone on it. So it's very much about resolving that and doing it. And thankfully,
nice to have somebody there fighting your corner. That's
what conveyancing's horrible. So it's never going to be perfect and it's never going to be sexy. So very much we try and make the best of a bad job, but we try and mitigate against issues from happening in that regard. And there's always something, you know, we had, this is terrible. We had a brilliant fee earner who was in a car crash and ended up getting a super bug and went on life support. So on a Monday morning, we've got a great fee earner with a load of cases. And thinking she might be back in the next day or two. And then later in the week, like, obviously it's much more important than the cases. You just send love and prayers to them. But from an operational point of view, there's not a fee earner just sat there in that firm twiddling thumbs. So we've got to redistribute that caseload to make sure that it's still going to good fee earners and that it's being distributed in the right way. I don't think a lot of people would go that extra mile for you like we would. And the point I'm making is there's always going to be a curveball or something that you just can't mitigate against or even predict.
And you guys are there to help navigate that time, aren't you? Which is great. That's exactly what people need, especially when they're trying to get cases through.
I think the most important thing is we do turn around cases much quicker than industry average times. And I think they are the reasons. I think if brokers want to get the cases through quicker, with anyone, whoever you're working with, there's a couple of easy things that they can do. If you want me to elaborate in terms of
how please. They could what we'll do, let's talk about that instead of talking about the strategy, because we're nearly coming up to like 40 minutes. We've had a really good chat. Let's talk about what brokers can do to try and, regardless of which solicitor they're with, instead of going the strategies question, what can they do to help speed up their cases? Or what would help?
Ultimately, I would say that, especially when you're looking at, like, obviously when you first meet with the clients, I'd be trying to get quotes locked in there. And if you don't know which lender you're going to be going with, I'd be going back to the firm as soon as you do to make sure that I'm panelled. There's nothing worse than instructing a law firm and finding out later in the day that you've got to go and find another one because they're not on the panel. And so we have a lender checker in our system, but most people will have something similar to that. So always check that. That'd be the main thing. I think I would play a big role in the sign-up process stage. So something that we do is we publicise how each law firm signs clients up. So something to be aware of is that the Law Society and probably, I suppose, alongside that, the SRA, but particularly the Law Society, are really keen for law firms to go digital only on the sign-up process. And rightly or wrongly, the FCA and the banking sector are putting much more pressure on solicitors from an anti-money laundering point of view, in terms of source of funds, in terms of proof of funds. And it's going to be causing a lot of frustration, understandably, for clients and brokers that for some reason the FCA might take 3 months bank statements, but the recommendation to law firms is to review, well, there isn't a set period, but probably the minimum is 6 to 12 months bank statements. Right. And they've got to go through every line, find out where you're getting that money from and who it's come from. And there's a lot of pressure on them to do that. The point I'm trying to make is that I think some brokers will instruct the case and think their job is done. The problem, if you put yourself in the mindset of the law firm, and let's say you and I own a law firm, Chris, we've got a lot of clients that we're sending sign-up packs out to. Do you or I want clients who are not cooperative and will not respond to emails? No. So are we going to throw our own resources and additional costs at trying to secure clients who are then going to burn fixed cost money during the process? Yeah. Probably not. So there's of course, if they reach out to us, we're going to support them, but we're not going to chase them daily. One, because we get done for harassment probably, but also two, it's a waste of our resources. There's enough alarm bells here that we would reach out to the client and say, if you need help filling out the paperwork, let us know. But there is a sweet spot to that for law firms. And I think what we try and do is play a bit more of an active role in that ourselves. We tell the brokers exactly how each law firm works. So there are some law firms that will still do paper packs. There are some that are digital only, probably because they've done a deal with the PII, maybe got cheaper insurance because they've said, well, we're doing digital only, third, fourth, or a proven ID. And therefore, all your clients have got to have a smartphone. Well, that's no good for some of your clients.
Yeah, so make sure you see your tailor to that. That's
honestly, it's the biggest variable. So we've got some brokers who play an active role on signups, and the signups are done same day. Caveat that with other brokers who don't do it, it can take 3 or 4 weeks for clients to fill out the whole signup process. Now, you are not getting that 3 or 4 weeks back. So even on a purchase, we might be ready to exchange in 8 weeks, and you still might have a client say, why has this taken so long? Well, it's taken 12 weeks, but actually you didn't sign up for 4.
Yeah, so it's educating those clients that they've got to get that paperwork back pretty fast.
That is the biggest variable I think the brokers can influence.
Yeah, influence.
Selecting the law firm for the right panel. And if you don't do it already, I would double check which fee earners are going to be assigned your work. If you wanted to, I would recommend you speak to them and get an idea each way of how you're going to work with one another. And obviously get a semblance from them in terms of caseload. Listen, if your caseload's too much, just raise the white flag, because service standards and times are going to, I don't care who you are.
Massive thing, isn't it?
Happens. And I think after that, it is just the communication piece then. There's not the most frustrating thing on a purchase and a sale from a variable point of view is the inquiries and sellers putting them together properly. But on a remo, it's getting the offer out. Ultimately, and that's really frustrating for brokers with rates changing and circumstances changing.
Yeah, that's it. Everybody's battling it, isn't it? So it's that communication between the lawyer. Some really good tips there for people to pick up on. So
I would I would also say never phone a law firm, and I would tell your clients never to phone the law firm unless asked. And if you're a broker, I wouldn't phone law firms. FCA, you'll have to record calls. SRA firms, solicitors do not have a requirement to record phone calls. The issue, even if they did, the problem, if you phone a law firm, you're going to get jammed on reception. You're going to get fee earners like me who have a time booked in. I'm not going to want to speak to you in that 9 till 10 window because I've got to review paperwork. But also, when I speak to you, Chris, I've got to type up a contemporaneous note of everything that was said. Now, if I get 30 phone calls, I am really wasting my time, because I have to record that call, because if you put in a complaint, that's a vital piece of evidence about what I said and what you said and what promises may or may not have been given. Whereas if you email in and say, I need a phone call, it might be that you don't really need the phone call. People have got this thing, I think, that they get an instant response if they phone, and I think that it can just build more friction. And even if you do get through, and even if you're happy with the phone call, you are increasing wasted time for your fee earner, which is counterproductive. And if clients can email in all the time, any queries they've got, you've got that chain. And I would say to brokers, get your clients copying you in on every email to the firm, even if you're not interested and you just want them deleted.
Just get copied in.
You know, we all get emails you don't want or need. A few more aren't gonna.
There's a few more. So don't call them, email them, make sure you connect with them first and tee up your clients to fill out the paperwork. Some really great tips. To finish the podcast, we like to donate £10 to a charity of your choice. Which charity do you want us to make the donation for, Sean?
So it would be the Duchenne Muscular Dystrophy Charity. So that is a muscular disease. The easiest way to explain it, I guess, is that everyone knows of motor neuron disease, which is very much the nerves. Duchenne muscular dystrophy is similar in the sense, although it's muscles, not nerves. It's something that affects probably 1 in 3,500. 99.9% of the time, it's boys. It's a genetic disease, not always, but generally carried by the mother. My son doesn't just have Duchenne muscular dystrophy. We got diagnosed last year, but he actually has an incredibly rare mutation of what is an incredibly rare disease.
Oh, what a shame.
So there's a lot of research going into that area at the moment. There's a lot of stuff going on in complicated areas of science that are fast moving, like gene therapy and stuff like that, gene editing. So yeah, that would be the charity that is obviously now over the past 12 months become very close to my heart.
Yeah, no, definitely we will make that donation for you.
That's pretty kind of you, mate. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming on, Sean. Loads of tips there for people to take away, including time management, solicitors. And if you do want to reach out to Sean, just send him a message on LinkedIn or go to mylegalclub.com.
It's mylegalclub.co.uk.
.co.uk,
I would say just a very final quick shout out for brokers, if it helps you. We've got that free book on pay-per-click and it genuinely is awesome. We've got brokers who have built businesses on converting online leads and they've given away their scripts, they've given away their strategy, awesome. They've given away how they did it, who they used. Obviously the Google My Business ebook guides you through how to set up your page and make sure it's there. And in terms of trying to get some of them organic referrals on, we've got some interviews on the website with brokers who have got estate agent business and they walk through how did they do it? How did they win the local estate agents over? What was their pitch? Things like, you know, it was more about the updates rather than the technical bit. One of them went in with a 3-foot Toblerone and said, that's for the owner. And the owner was like, I've got to meet the person who's got a 3-foot Toblerone.
Little things so, like that. So go onto your website and they can download it from there. Yeah. Loads of tools on their website. So go and take a look and reach out to Sean if you need a hand. Perfect, mate. Thank you very much for coming. I really appreciate it, Sean.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Chris.
Cheers, mate.